Welcome to the Voice Over Work podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Newton Media Group, a family of creative services. On the podcast today, we take a little deeper look into a book introduced in a previous podcast with a chapter-by-chapter look at Chapter 1, Fertile Conditionings to Learning. How do we learn? It seems like such a simple question, but decades of scientific literature tend to disagree with that notion. We may simply consider learning an activity where we just started engaging in as babies with no preparation. In our school years, we were the receptacles for a constant flow of information and experiences. And in most traditional settings, instructors measured how well we learned by how well we repeated the information back to them. We had no choice in the matter and simply went along with what was presented to us. This data accumulation and regurgitation almost suggests that learning is an automated process that we can only monitor, not control. In truth, there are factors, limitations, and conditions that affect our ability to learn. Understanding these elements can help you avoid mistakes and accelerate your learning. This book uses scientific principles and methods that will help you learn in a way that works best for you. All mental activities, including learning, are influenced by internal and external factors and conditions. Some factors we can control, others we have to overcome or work around. This first chapter discusses the scientific principles that drive our learning abilities and some of the best practices we can use to expand learning capacity. In other words, we must create fertile conditions for learning. Otherwise, we're sabotaging ourselves. You wouldn't try to learn to ski in a desert, would you? The human attention span. One of the first conditions to learning you must take into account is your attention span. Since 2006, the nonprofit group... Chapter 2, Memory Retention. Memory, of course, is heavily related to learning. People are seldom said to have learned something if they can't really remember any of it. This is why so many techniques and methods around learning focus on recall. As with other aspects of our cognition, however, we can drastically improve our memory if we take the time to understand its optimal function and how we can support this for better learning. If memory is a storage system that exists within specific neural pathways, then learning is about changing neural pathways to adapt one's behavior and thinking to the emergence of new information. They depend on each other because the goal of learning is to assimilate new knowledge into memory, and memory is useless without the ability to learn more. Many memory techniques exist, but they all truly function on the contents of this chapter. Memorization is how we store and retrieve information for use, essentially the process of learning, and there are three steps to creating a memory. An error in any of these steps will result in knowledge that is not effectively converted to memory. A weak memory, or the feeling of, I can't remember his name, but he was wearing purple. Encoding, storage, retrieval. Encoding is the step of processing information through your senses. We do this constantly. You're doing it right now. We encode information both consciously and subconsciously through all of our senses. If you're reading a book, you're using your eyes to encode information. But how much attention and focus are you actually giving it? The more attention and focus you devote to an activity, the more conscious your encoding becomes. Otherwise, it can be said that you subconsciously encode information, like listening to music at a cafe or... Chapter 3, Active Learning Techniques. Whether your school days are long past you, or you can still remember those stuffy, boring classrooms like they were yesterday, you can probably think of a few teaching techniques your teachers inflicted on you with greater or lesser success. So many of us embark on any new study endeavor by returning to these old tactics without thinking about whether they work for us or, indeed, ever work for our teachers. We might assume the more conventional approaches are the ones to use. But are they really the best? Researcher John Dunlosky and his associates conducted a thorough review of techniques and models related to learning in 2013. They examined 10 different methods, chosen because they were relatively easy to use and hence could be adopted by many students. You'll probably recognize all of them as techniques that you've tried in the past with varying degrees of success. Dunlosky's team rated each technique according to how well they were suited for the goal of learning and retention. As might be expected, the 5 models the team determined were poor for learning proved to be, arguably, the most commonly used and recognized. Summarization. In this model, students are asked to write their own summaries of texts to be learned. The point of summarization is to identify the main points of a text and capture the gist of it while excluding unimportant or repetitive material. Dunlosky's team claimed summarization is a skill that only works if the student was already trained in how to do it. For the majority of students without that training, the technique couldn't be executed and wouldn't be effective. In other words, summarization might be effective, and in theory it is, but you're probably doing it wrong. In this case, doing it wrong only wastes your time and energy. Chapter 4, Make Learning Secondary. That's the way to learn the most, that when you're doing something with such enjoyment that you don't notice that the time passes. Albert Einstein to his son, Hans Einstein. There's a lot of wisdom to unpack in that simple sentence Einstein once uttered to his son, and it ties directly into the focus of this chapter. It's a straightforward premise. If you're lucky enough to be consumed with a goal or objective, and achieving that goal or objective happens to require the acquisition of skills or knowledge, then you won't even notice you're working to learn and remember. Your learning and expertise become second nature, all in pursuit of that goal. I want to briefly repeat a story I've told elsewhere. I had a very motivating goal of talking to a girl in my Spanish class, Jessica. She tended to turn around and ask me for help because she was perhaps the one person who paid less attention than me in class. So I vowed to get better at Spanish so she would continue talking to me. In this pursuit for her attention, I studied Spanish like a madman and even researched obscure references and vocabulary to impress her. I didn't know it at the time, but I had made learning secondary, and the pursuit of my goal was my biggest priority. Every new word or phrase I learned was one I could use for another purpose. I learned it as a byproduct, and that's perhaps the easiest way to learn. Here's another example that involves my older sibling. When he was growing up, the internet was just starting to become popular. Of course, with the internet came chat rooms, message boards, and all sorts of communication with people that weren't right next to you. It opened up the world for many people. I remember watching him sit at the family computer and struggle to type. One day, he downloaded... Chapter 5, Teaching to Learn. You might wonder why a book on learning would include a chapter on teaching. Rather than teaching and learning being opposites, they're really two aspects of the same single process. In understanding both, we gain a fuller appreciation than if we had examined the subject from just one side or the other. There is unexpected value in observing how others synthesize information. First, you'll see how someone else learns and absorbs information. Sometimes you can visibly see someone's face light up when they get it, and this is no small feat in the process of learning. Second, you'll see how the act of teaching improves the learning of the teacher. In observing how people synthesize information, you can improve upon how you do it. Understanding both sides of the coin is a helpful exercise. This, of course, is the process of teaching others to help you yourself learn. This chapter is about how learning to effectively teach others is a great method of learning in itself and a good skill to have in general. The Learning Pyramid. The infamous Learning Pyramid, also called the Cone of Experience, sheds light on why being able to teach is vital. In fact, much of what we talk about dances around the spectrum of more passive learning as less useful and more active learning as more impactful. This is what the learning pyramid encompasses. Some may take it as gospel, But the numbers are best if they're seen as rough guidelines. However, they still showcase the different results of our learning activities, as learners retain 90% of what they learn when they teach someone else or use their skills immediately, 75% of what they learn when they practice. Chapter 6, Mistakes in Learning. Learning's a fluid activity. It's taking concepts that were unknown or nebulous to us in the past, finding a way to funnel them into our understanding, and incorporating them into our lives as need be. There are plenty of learning techniques, as we've seen, but no actual rules. As such, there are some traps and inefficiencies that can come up when we're trying to learn. They can be reduced with some disciplined approaches and organization. In this chapter, we'll examine some of these pitfalls and what to do to correct them. Simply put, most of us are making mistakes in our attempts to learn, and we don't even know it. You may have caught some errors now by virtue of learning the techniques presented thus far in the book, but that's just the beginning. Lazy reading. How do you take the information you need and really read to effectively increase your knowledge? Enter The Four Levels of Reading, and it was developed by philosopher Mortimer Adler in his suitably titled publication, How to Read a Book. Adler explains that reading is not a single, universally consistent act. He breaks up the act of reading into four individual levels that differ in purpose, effort, and the amount of time they take. Furthermore, different tiers apply to different kinds of reading. Some books can be appropriate for all levels, while others just support one or two. Especially in the higher two levels, faithfully following these tiers of reading will greatly advance your expertise on the subject. Adler's four levels of reading, from simplest to most complex, are elementary, inspectional, analytical, syntopical. This has been Super Learning: Advanced Strategies for Quicker Comprehension, Greater Retention, and Systematic Expertise. Written by Peter Hollins, narrated by Russell Newton. Copyright 2021 by Peter Hollins. Production copyright by Peter Hollins. Please be sure to visit Amazon.com or Audible.com for more information on this book and the author. With an eclectic collection of water cooler knowledge, inspirational stories, and motivational thoughts from some of the newest audiobooks on the market, this has been the Voice Over Work podcast, brought to you by Newton Media Group, a family of creative services.